Gillian Kingston, you're the Vice President, aren't you, of the World Methodist Council?
I am indeed.
And you've been involved in the ecumenical dialogue for a long time now, both the international dialogue you were involved in and also at home in your native Ireland.
Yes, I've been involved at home in Ireland. I'm involved both at the Irish Council of Churches level, but also in the dialogue we're having with the Anglicans, and the covenant between the Church of Ireland, which is an Anglican church, and the Methodist Church in Ireland is quite a world leader in terms of interchangeability of ministries. But yes, you're quite right. I was on the International Commission between the Vatican and the World Methodist Council from 1986 to 2006.
You're here in Rome marking 50 years, the half century of the dialogue between Methodists and Catholics. What do you think, perhaps, are the real reasons for celebration? What are the main achievements of these past 50 years?
The Methodist-Catholic International Commission was arguably the first international commission that was established in the wake of Vatican II, and it has continued down through the 50 years, picking up on themes that are important to both Methodists and Catholics. An interesting factor in our good relations is that historically there was never a breaking point between Methodists and Catholics. Now, obviously, with a Catholic-Lutheran dialogue, you can look to the Lutheran Reformation. In the situation with the Anglicans, you can look at the English Reformation. Methodists are, as some people have called it, grandchildren of the Reformation, because the split for Methodists was with the Anglican Church in the late 18th century. And obviously the earlier split was between the Anglicans and the Roman Catholics. So we don't have any history, any doctrine, any event to which we can point and say that we must resolve. Then there are factors that I think we do have in common, particularly a sense of holiness and the significance of holiness. Now, this isn't the sort of holiness that means that we're so heavenly minded that we're of no earthly use, but rather it is a dedication to God and to the work of God. Then there are other things within our two traditions that we appreciate about each other. Roman Catholics are very interested, for example, in the Eucharistic hymns of John and Charles Wesley, in which they see a Eucharistic theology which resonates in many respects with their own.
The dialogue is all about learning from each other, isn't it? As you say, Catholics learning from the Methodist tradition, but also Methodists learning from the Catholic Church. What do you think, perhaps, are the main gifts, the main things that you have been learning through this dialogue for the past half century from Rome, from the Vatican, from the Catholic world?
I think Methodists will learn what it is to be a church that has a significant structure which holds it together, which has a leadership to which all may look. Indeed, we pointed these things out in the document that became known as the Nairobi document towards a statement on the church in 1986. There are those sort of things about the Catholic Church which we don't have in Methodism. Methodism, on the other hand, can particularly offer to the Catholic Church something of the importance of involving lay people in ministry, an emphasis on the scripture. But I think you're right in saying that we learn from each other. And it's probably true to say that in the 50 years since the dialogue started, both in terms of the dialogue itself, but also in terms of ecumenism at local level, Methodists have learnt more about the importance of the Eucharist and liturgical observance, and Catholics have learnt more about the importance of Scripture and the use of lay people, the role of lay people in such structures.
You're talking about ministry at grassroots level, which you've been involved in for so long in your native Ireland. How is the dialogue seen there? I mean, do many people even know about relations and this celebration of 50 years of dialogue with the Catholic Church?
I'm afraid the one-word answer is no. And I will be talking about this and about the importance of reception. Right from the very beginning of the Methodist-Catholic International Commission, in the first document which came out in Denver in 1971, there was this strong emphasis on the necessity for the work that was being done to permeate through to the pew and the pulpit, to the seminary and the church. And we have not been good at this. That said, we are not the only ones who have not been good at it. It is a real problem of international theological dialogue that there is a glass ceiling through which these documents, which could be very valuable, are simply not falling, and we really must work on this. Now, the early documents of the International Commission, the Denver 71 and the Dublin 76, both put an emphasis on what could be done at local level. And later documents, too, of the International Commission have said, look, these are things we might be doing at local level. The Seoul document, for example, puts an emphasis on things that Catholics and Methodists might do at local level. Now, of course, it's not as easy as that, because when we meet over the dialogue table, we are Methodists and we're Catholics. At local level, we intermingle with people of other traditions, for example, Anglicans, Reformed, Pentecostal.
And there is an increasingly strong tradition of working together, isn't there, at local level, on important issues facing the whole of society?
Yes, there is. The early work of the World Council of Churches, divided into life and work and faith and order, it was unfortunately, I think, a false dichotomy, because I think they all have to go together. But yes, I think people find it very easy to work together. They may differ on theological niceties, but when a Catholic and a Methodist looks at a poor person who is suffering, then our hearts each go out to that person. And it is in things like that that people come together. The migrant issue, for example, helping people who come to our countries, and particularly in Ireland, we have a lot of immigrants, people coming from sub-Saharan Africa and certainly up to fairly recently from Eastern Europe. And the churches do tend to get together and say, what are the issues here? How can we advocate for these people?
And as leaders of the World Methodist Council, you will be, in fact, thanking Pope Francis, won't you, for his leadership in this important area of the church's mission?
Absolutely. And one of our themes as the World Methodist Council for this quinquennium is that we focus on the poor and the marginalised, and that we challenge those things which divide us. And yes, Pope Francis, I think, has been a wonderful leader for peoples of all faiths, and indeed of none, in the stand he has taken on things, not least in Laudato Si, that wonderful document on the environment, when he looks at the wholeness of creation and he says everything is interdependent, interconnected. You know, you cannot despoil the earth and hope to get away with it. And very often the people who are most suffering because of our greed are the poor. I remember at the last World Methodist Council meeting, conference indeed, in Houston last year, one very powerful speaker was a minister from one of the Pacific Islands who stood up and possibly made what was the shortest presentation of the conference. He said, "My people are going to be the first climate refugees and we will have no right of return." And he sat down, and you could have heard a pin drop. And that is where what corporations and people who think there is no such thing as climate change must be held to answer, because there are people suffering who will leave their countries because they will be covered with water.